Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the March 31 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting of Channel Seeds in Windsor, Illinois, Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, and Brian Stark of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
Well, normally I would ask a set of questions that you'd like to have answered for the day, but I know we probably should just dive into the USDA reports that were released on March the 31st at 11 a.m. So we'll do that this morning. The United States Department of Agriculture said U.S. farmers would plant 106% of the corn acreage that they planted last year at 93.6 million acres. The trade range was from 89 to 91 million. The average there at 89.972. Again, USDA saying 93.6 million acres for corn. Soybeans at 82.236. That's just 99% of last year, down 1%. And the trade range at 81.6 to 82.4. So right in line with what the trade was thinking, at least on the range, just a bit below their average was around 83 million acres. Again, soybean acreage at 82.65. When these numbers were let out of the gate this morning, Matt Bennett at 11 o'clock, what did you expect the trade to do? And I guess 15 cents lower on a Thursday for corn didn't seem too bad in comparison to what you thought it might happen.
Yeah, I would say my initial reaction is that, yeah, we're going to probably trade this thing limit lower, maybe for a little bit. You know, I've been saying all along that I thought we would trade this acreage report, you know, for a little bit, and then we'd be looking at weather. But the bottom line is, with a 93.6, you know, you got to look at it a little bit longer. You know, we're 2.6 million acres above the highest estimate. So, you know, definitely warrants a little closer look. And, you know, I think as the market played out during the day, it could have been worse than what it was, but it definitely let the wind out of the sails. And by all means, it kind of threw water on any fire that any person thought, you know, we might get a rally going here going into the spring based upon weather alone.
Bill Gentry, this would be what, the third largest, I think, crop since 1944. That's a darn long time.
It sure is. And I think when you start to do the math, one of the things that we went and reflected on, obviously you're going to look for chart points that you might work towards. But the other thing, too, is when you look back where the December corn was trading back on the 1st of March when these surveys were taken, the market finished on the first day of the month at 373 and three quarters. We're only about 5 cents below that. So the market worked its way higher on some short covering through the course of the month. But at the end of the month, we find ourselves pretty much back where we started. If indeed the farmers were looking at planting this many acres of corn at these price levels, the market's probably going to view itself as oversupplied and have to do a little bit of supply crunching. Arguably right now, there's almost no way that you could dial in less than a 2 billion bushel carryout for next fall. So the market's purpose right now is probably challenged to go down and basically stimulate some demand or tell producers not to plant it. The other thing on top of that is the yield assessment. We've got a lot of weather variables and things to look at going forward, but all things considered, we've got some pretty big numbers to discount going forward.
Your thought process, Brian Stark?
I think, like a lot of people, we're very surprised given the current economic situation where you saw a lot of the corn acreage increase. I mean, it was pretty well explained when you have all wheat acres down 5 million. and corn acreage up almost 5 million, 5.5 million from last year. You look at some of the states with the biggest increases, North Dakota, Kansas, you know, some of your main wheat areas, you can see that's their intention. And it's a little surprising when you look at some of the production in those type of states and the yields that they would expect for them to focus on corn or intend to plant corn. I guess in our bias is we always say you can't fight the tape. I think obviously the trade has to discourage corn acreage and some switching. And we've taken the approach now with the ratio climbing to 2.5 to 1 beans to corn that the producer, if they're going to switch or if they're going to look at planting beans, they probably need to take the negativity from the report and look at it from an opportunistic perspective and sell new crop beans and defend their bean position.
All right. You mentioned that there were some changes. So the changes look like this year over year, and this comes from the USDA's executive briefing. Corn acreage was up 5.6 million acres on the prospective plantings report over last year. Soft red winter wheat down 1.9 million acres, and the hard red at 3.2 million acres lower. So I take that back. The spring wheat down 1.89, and the winter wheat down 3.2 million acres. That's a pretty big swing. Those would be in areas, I suppose, that could drag down the national average, too. Does anybody find any solace in that part of this equation?
I think Bill kind of said it earlier. No matter where you're planting it, when you plant this magnitude, the third largest since 1944, if that's where we end up at the end of June, it's going to take a pretty big, massive hit to yield to put any dent into the projected any carryout. So even if you switch 2.5 million acres to beans or even to some of these smaller grains like milo, barley, you're still looking at having to have a significant weather problem to dig into our carryout.
All right. One of the things that I asked Matt, and you suggested this at your previous comment, and I'll come back to you, Matt, on this. If producers are looking at their soybeans at this time, do they really need to think very, very hard at this point about protecting both new and old crop soybeans?
Yes. You know, I think the thing that I've been pointing at throughout this month, you know, a lot of producers were telling me that on their individual farms, getting back to $9 soybeans and above basis of board was going to be a good place to go ahead and step in and, you know, maybe make some sales. And so, you know, that's where their price objective was, you know, until we got to $9 soybeans, you know, and then the price objective maybe got ratcheted up just a little bit. But I think we got to take a long, hard look at this, you know, and at this point we have to understand that, you know, a report like this can definitely change some mindsets whenever it comes to planting soybeans. And, you know, let's face it, you know, 82.2 is still a pretty darn big number. From a historical perspective, you know, and we've had fantastic yields the last couple of years. So as far as I'm concerned, I think producers need to be, you know, pretty aggressive in locking in some levels, keeping the upside open, though, on a decent portion of that, just in case we do run into weather issues. Because I think that, you know, the soybean acreage number probably has room to grow, whereas I think it'd be awfully tough to assume, you know, the corn acreage number will grow, you know, when you look at what's going on weather-wise. In the Delta and obviously in the Midwest, you know, if we would stay wet for a few weeks, it's definitely going to call into question, you know, the same old conversation we always have, whether it's prevent plan or switching of acres. So I think it's going to be awfully tough for us to get to 93.6. But as Brian suggests, you know, it's going to be tough, even if you drop it 2 million acres, to think that you're really going to be in real peril.
You travel as much as any of the rest of our analysts, probably quite a bit more. Do you think that producers in marginal areas will decide that soybeans are a better option, or have they already put nitrogen on and the corn is a done deal?
You know, I think that it all depends. I mean, I've been saying this for a while. You know, there's a little bit of a difference, you know, in the spring of 2016 than what there was, you know, 18 months ago, 24 months ago when it comes to liquidity. And I think that, you know, there's definitely some concerns out there. There's a cash crunch. And so I think, you know, on highly productive farmland, it's pretty tough for me to come up with any situation other than, you know, the ROI on corn is still awfully good compared to soybeans. But whenever you get into marginal areas, it's not so convincing, first of all. And second of all, as you know, it's quite a bit more expensive to plant corn. So I do think that there will be a fair amount of these acres that you call swing acres that can switch around. But I don't think that it's going to be a paramount shift to where we get under 90 million or anything like that by any stretch of the imagination. But again, I think corn acreage will move lower, and I think soybean acreage is likely to creep up some as well.
Bill Gentry, most believe that the prospective plantings and the grain stocks report set the tone for the coming month or month and a half until we really get into some weather problems, if there are any, with the growing season in the Midwest. However, this tone is split because both the wheat number and the soybean number provided support to those marketplaces.
Yeah, I think especially looking at the wheat in response to that question, I think it's going to be really important to see what the open interest numbers are in the morning. If we saw liquidation, or if we saw, pardon me, short covering, and all the buying strength in the wheat today was because of that, then we have not stimulated new buying. We've simply given the market a catalyst to crowd some more shorts out of the market. Similarly, the funds have already bought into the bean market. It's been on the coattails of the palm oil market and following the bean oil. Historically, bean oil is not a really good product leader for the beans, but it has allowed us to get to some of those better sales levels. You know, $9 out of the field right now for new crop beans would have been really wishful thinking, you know, a month or two ago. Now we have the opportunity. We really do need to be taking advantage of it. And as far as upside from here, I'm watching to see if the funds really want to pursue additional length in the beans. They've already gotten into that market pretty heavily. I really don't see a lot of incentive to take the bean market appreciably higher from here, unless, of course, the palm oil market gets excited again.
What do producers need to think about today?
I think realistically they need to basically execute the plan. I think developing that strategy where your numbers match up and the market's giving you some opportunities, making sure you get it executed, because the opportunities, especially after this crop gets planted, is going to be predicated on weather, and marketing against weather is increasingly difficult. So what we need to do right now is pick those points where we're satisfied, not happy, but satisfied with our marketing, and execute that plan accordingly. Then the other thing too is, in our in-house, we've talked about it with all our producers. This is a sell and defend market. Sell the value and defend it if something new develops. So realistically, have a criteria or a threshold where you might assume some re-ownership. Maybe it might be by calendar, or maybe it might be by price, but realistically saying, I will re-own this crop for a particular reason. And we've seen some of our guys looking out at the September or the December 10, 15 cent options as not necessarily a lottery ticket, but a defensive strategy just to grease the gears of the marketing programs. It's not that we've got to buy something that says go right now, because I personally don't think that we have, but realistically, we're much cheaper than we were a while ago. I looked back at some of its previous charts. We've got, you know, support at 350, but if that breaks, we probably have some vulnerability down to 330. You know, if I saw a 330 in the next 2-3 weeks, you know, I think I could probably put a few defensive call positions on against cash sales just to see what happens, because it is going to be a long growing season, and we do have some additional risks going forward now.
Brian Stark, how far along have producers been to this point in marketing corn to you for new crop?
I would say a very small percentage. I think, unfortunately, they were looking out, hoping that we'd potentially see some weather issues, some better opportunities post-report moving forward. And I think a lot of them are now, you know, going back to the drawing board, trying to figure out what's the next step. And the one thing we said all along to our producers is that if you can't make the decision to pull the trigger to make some sales, max out your revenue crop insurance. And I think a lot of them did do that for the most part, taking out that 85% RP policy. And now from here, you know, it's taking a negative and turning it into a realistic, opportunistic situation like I described earlier. If corn has got to a point where it frustrates them and they can't pull the trigger, well, let's talk about soybeans, because again, like I alluded to earlier, I think that's the defensive mechanism that you have to protect if there is some acreage switching moving forward without a weather issue. And I like what Bill said earlier. I think the sell and defend concept is appropriate. We've been saying all along we like the minimum price type strategies, you know, buying a put, selling an out-of-the-money call, creating a fence. I think that gives the guy some upside, even if it's hedging the grain and then attaching a long call feature and out-of-the-money, whether it's a sep or the deece. Like Bill suggested, I think that's a great avenue. And I think one thing that they can focus on is though I think there will be a buying opportunity to a certain extent in corn if we continue to grind low enough. And we have to get that ratio in line to push acreage back over to beans. And it doesn't mean the bean market has to rally. I think the bean market could stay right in here and corn sags another 15 to 20 cents lower. So it isn't always necessarily beans rallying more so than corn, but basically treading water while the corn market grinds lower.
What did your basis do for corn and soybeans today?
It was unchanged, but I think that's a great topic to discuss because I think right now the general consensus is the farmer is probably going to shut the rest of his bin doors. He's moved what he has to have moved for cash flow reasons prior to planting. He's going to go to the field now with a right, wrong, or indifferent attitude that I'm just going to wait and see. And while he does that, movement will slow down. And I think even though the end user is hand to mouth and will continue to be that way with this comfortable supply and looking at big corn acres, they're still going to have to create monthly movement. So I suspect with the big board break, basis will appreciate here in the next 60 days for corn.
For those, and I'm thinking of soybeans more than corn on this, for those who still have a basis contract on their soybeans, what do they do?
I think they have to take advantage of pricing it right now. You know, if you get to an opportunity, I just think there's a limitation moving forward with the fact that everyone's going to look at corn and say, you know, I think Matt alluded to this earlier, you're wet in the Delta, you're wet in the Deep South. The only one that's close to their five-year average of planting is Texas. Louisiana is way behind. Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee, Kentucky, same thing. I think there's going to be a natural feel that we're going to go to beans with some of those acres, and if that happens, we may be to a point where the bean market may turn over at some point. So I would encourage guys to take advantage of where the bean market has rallied 65 or so cents here in the last 4 to 5 weeks. I think they need to reward that rally.
Hey, Matt, a couple of other things. These are both related to corn. China this week saying we're going to release our corn stocks and we're going to do it in October and let them float on the world market. And then this week, both Drew Lerner from World Weather Incorporated and Mike Tenora of T-Storm mentioned that it appears the dry weather, which normally comes in Brazil, looks like it's going to come early, and that may cause some problems for a Safrinha corn crop, which I'm not quite certain got planted late, but of course the soybean crop earlier in the year got planted late, so I suspect it probably is in the ground a little bit later than usual. So how do you take all of those little tidbits into your thought process?
Well, I definitely think the Chinese situation could be obviously a pretty tough situation for us from a pricing perspective. I'll be very interested to see, you know, how much of their old corn, you know, nobody really knows exactly what they have. Probably interested to see how much of it is of exportable quality, first of all. I think, you know, there's definitely going to be plenty of it that is, but I'm not so sure that, you know, that a large percentage of it will be. So if they do release that on the world market, it's obviously going to be pretty tough on our exports. But, you know, looking at the South American situation, it's something that we talked about quite a bit earlier on in the year, that they were getting that crop planted a little bit later. You know, I was watching Drew Lerner as well this week, and not only was he talking about that, but he was also talking about the fact that he kind of sees maybe, you know, that this onset of the La Nina might come a little bit earlier than what he was originally thinking. So from a weather perspective, I think that there's definitely some issues that are out there. And, you know, I told several producers today that were quite concerned, you know, for obvious reasons with what we saw today from the USDA, that, you know, all's not lost yet. I mean, we do have to get the crop in the ground, first of all, you know, and second of all, as mentioned previously, I think that, you know, the general tendency, if we're going to plant a lot of corn on marginal acres, is that we would see a little bit of a struggle to get to the same type of yield levels we've had the last couple of years. So, you know, I'm not going to get too down in the mouth about it just yet, but by all means, I definitely want to look for any opportunities that I can from a producer's perspective to, you know, I like Bill's analogy of, you know, selling and defending. We've been trying to look at doing those sort of things all along, whether, you know, whether we're talking about old crop or new. You know, we're owners of quite a few at the money September call spreads against, you know, cash bushels. And while guys were frustrated with that, they were sure glad that they had sold the cash corn, you know, and did not have to participate in that 15, 16 cent move lower today.
Bill Gentry, on your sell and defend strategy, can you go through that with me really quickly? And I ask this because my experience with the basis contracts was that producers, while they have some understanding, don't always know how to use these particular strategies or even the products. So talk to me as if I have no idea, and that may very well be the case, of how to use this defend strategy that you're talking about.
Okay. Well, the sell and defend, as far as we're concerned, is probably locking in a percentage of a cash sale for fall delivery. If you had reasonable basis and you can get a reasonable price out of the field, make the cash sale and then come back in and re-own, let's say, a call option. You could choose how much of a budget you want to spend on it, whether it's 15, 20, 25 cents as far as re-ownership call, but you're really defending the sale against making a mistake. But the number one and most important thing, and I've told my clients this before, in a oversupplied market, it's a cardinal sin not to be short, because the price will get away from you and you'll be sitting there underwater hoping for higher prices. Once again, these prices that we're looking at today aren't fantastic, but they're much better than they were a while ago, especially in beans, maybe not so much in corn, but especially after today. But making that cash sale so you have a price that you can work with on your budget, and then you defend that sale in case something like weather does work its way back into the scenario. And I also think, you know, going back to your China situation, just to add a little light on that, 2 months ago, the USDA adjusted Chinese corn stocks significantly, and the market digested it very well. If now we've broken the new contract lows in corn and they start to dump more stuff on the market, even if the quality is not really great, it's really going to be a burden. And so the market's job may actually be turning to creating demand rather than rationing supply.
And then I want to move to you, Brian Stark, on this. So producers make sales. What are they on the hook for, and how much should they be willing to make a sale for, not in price, but in terms of percentage at this time of the year?
I think, you know, we've been recommending all along a 40 to 50% blend of cash sales, HTA slash minimum price type strategies with a put and out of the money call, like I referenced earlier, buying a put to create the floor and selling an out of money call to give you some upside to help finance that floor in the 40 to 50% range expected production of 2016, corn and beans. And I would say today, given today's result, I might even push that bean percentage up a little higher depending on the level of crop insurance that they carry, simply because of our gut instinct that we will see some switching and could add to some of the bearishness on the bean complex. But in general, that's kind of the level of percentage we've been recommending a producer gets to in his new crop plantings.
And should they, for some reason, find that they are unable to raise 40 or 50% of a crop, what happens?
Well, I think that's why we advocate the crop insurance, because you're going to have an 85% coverage. We push individually based coverage, so the history of the farm, the annual production history, 10-year APH, messed with the February average for December and November, December corn futures and November bean futures to create a revenue floor. And that's their insulation to give them the encouragement to sell ahead before they know what they have raised. And we usually don't push past that level until we have a better feeling of where we're at. But they can sleep better at night having that coverage and being able to sell. So if, in case they do come up short with a crop problem, they've got that as a backstop to help cover their contracts.
Yeah, so essentially the revenue that they would get from the crop and insurance flows through to the to cover the sales that they don't have grain to deliver to you.
Correct.
Matt Bennett, let's get a final word from you.
Well, I think that we've pretty much covered the things that people are really going to want to talk about whenever it comes to what came out today. You know, looking at the stocks report, you know, as far as corn goes, I mean, that was a non-event. Basically, we came in right at where the average trade analyst, you know, guess was. And so, you know, I don't think that was much of an issue. But, you know, I think one thing that I've been watching pretty closely is how much corn we've been burning through for ethanol. You know, I think that corn demand is, you know, going to be pretty strong. And you take a move like we saw today, and I don't think that it's going to do anything but maybe get a little bit better yet. And so, you know, watching exports, we've finally gotten exports more or less on the right track. I mean, we're not setting any records, but we're at least starting to catch back up just a little bit. I don't know that we'll get to the USDA goal, but it certainly looks better than what it did a couple of months ago. And then, of course, whenever the you know, the pork industry has got a little bit of profit, I don't think that they're going to be backing off any on production. And then, you know, cattle are getting fed to pretty heavy weight still. So I think that disappearance on corn moving forward shouldn't disappoint us a whole lot. And I don't think that that's something that I want to go to sleep on. So, you know, I'm kind of like Bill. I think that we're going to be building demand in here. And, you know, I think it's going to be, you know, that's going to be one good thing we have going for us. So if we do like Brian is suggesting, and I think we all are suggesting, that maybe we switch a few acres over from corn to beans, then it will heighten the chance that we might get a, you know, a little bit of a weather rally this summer where, you know, we can take advantage of, you know, some of these strategies that we've put on after we've sold the corn and been able to put strategies on, which would enable us to benefit in some sort of weather market. I think we'll get an opportunity at some point that none of us are really thinking about right now.
Brian Stark, your final word?
I think the biggest thing to watch, obviously, is going to point towards weather, but I also think producers need to pay attention to the currency relationships. I still think they have a big hold on export demand. The strength of the dollar, or lack thereof here the last few weeks relative to outside world currencies, will help that competitive and drive, hopefully, some increased demand for the use of our products. And the other position is, I think they have to watch the fund position. Even though the farmer is very long on the old crop side, the funds added to their short corn position today, to the tune of 200,000 contracts, I believe, short. So that at some point could result in a volatile move up, give us opportunity if they ever decide to have a reason to short cover.
And Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities.
Yeah, and piggybacking on that previous thought, as far as the short covering efforts, I'm fairly confident it will happen at some point in time, making sure that we sit down, evaluate our situation, and put our orders into sell levels that we would be satisfied with going forward, and be proactive in our marketing plan. Also make sure that we've got those orders working before we go to the field and get distracted by other facets of our production operation.
Bill Gentry is with Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, joined on this March 31 edition of Commodity Week by Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting out of Channel Seeds in Windsor, Illinois, and Brian Stark of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County, Illinois. I'm ULBI Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.